We can get Commissioner Leonard on the phone. And we could, there's Commissioner Saltzman. I think this is going to go 3 hours.
Honey?
But 3 hours. Douglas thinks it's going to go 3 hours.
I need more chocolate.
Yeah.
Is that the only thing you have said to me?
Commissioner Leonard, do you hear us?
Hello.
Hi.
Commissioner Leonard, great.
Yeah.
All right. The city council is coming back from a break. For the record, it is still Wednesday,
21st.
September 21st. It is 2 p.m. Commissioner Leonard will be participating by telephone pursuant to City Code Section 3.02.025. Because this is a time-sensitive land use issue, failure to allow his participation jeopardizes the public interest, health, safety, and welfare. And unless there are objections, he will be participating via telephone, and he's wired in and watching us online. Hearing no objections, we will proceed with Commissioner Leonard on audio. I now turn to the city attorney, Lindley Reese, for initial announcements.
This is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. You can't bring up anything new. This hearing is to decide only if the hearing officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. If you start to talk about new issues or try to present new evidence today, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. We'll begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services that will last approximately, but I understand probably a little longer than 10 minutes today. Following the staff report, council will then hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant, in this case, the applicant, will go first and have 10 minutes to present their case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal, that is, who support the application, will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the council. The principal opponent will have 15 minutes then to address the city council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the principal opponent, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the council. I would like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing council today. The evidentiary record is closed. Again, this is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the hearings officer. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, the council may not consider it and may reject it in their final decision. Objections to new evidence. If you believe a person who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to that argument during your testimony. Objections to new issues. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the hearings officer, you may object to the council's consideration of that issue. And finally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow counsel to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court to challenge the conditions of approval.
Who's the expert on the record on staff? Okay. So
for the record, since he's not at a microphone, Douglas Hardy from BDS.
So if you would move your chair over so you're sitting beside Lindley when the testimony occurs, we're gonna follow that rule very closely. So you're not, under state law, you're not allowed to bring new evidence, new issues, new testimony. And instead of wasting time going back and forth with objections, if staff believes that there is new evidence being presented at the microphone, can be verbally or otherwise, I've asked the city attorney, Lindley Reese, to interrupt. Okay? So I'm now going to ask if there are any conflicts of interest. Do any members of the city council wish to declare a conflict of interest? For the record, I don't hear any declarations of conflicts of interest. Do any members of council have ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of this hearing to disclose?
Mayor, it's our tradition at these hearings to just point out for the public that we get emails and phone calls and other things on these issues. They are processed through staff. Staff, in turn, brief us, and that's how we keep the commissioners outside of the ongoing discussion about the issue.
And I've received multiple emails and have not responded on the content of them, just acknowledging the receipt.
And I would second Commissioner Fritz. I do, on my own email, see emails, and I just acknowledge receipt.
Matt Grum, on my staff, met with the appellant at their request shortly after the hearings officer made his decision. Matt also received a phone call last week from a representative of the General Services Administration. I was not provided any details or briefings on those conversations beyond that they occurred.
And my contacts have been similar to the description provided by Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Fritz. All right. Do the council members have any other matters that need to be discussed before we begin this hearing?
I have a clarifying question. In a briefing from Douglas Hardy on the 19th, referenced an ICE custody release plan, and I'm wondering if that's in the record and if adding it as a condition of approval can be considered.
Can we interrupt for a minute and have the title read?
Well, if you insist.
Okay.
This is item 1007, appeal of Rodney Grinsberg on behalf of Lindquist Development Company property owner against the hearings officer's decision to deny a conditional use review to establish a detention facility to be operated by the Immigrant and Customs Enforcement Agency at 4310 Southwest McAdam Avenue. Land use 11-124052 CUBR.
And since I was walking, if that was a question for me, would you please repeat it?
Yes, in the briefing from staff dated September 19th, there's reference to a ICE custody release plan, which is requested to be incorporated as a condition of approval. Is that new, and can that be considered, or what's the status of that?
Typically, a condition of approval is not considered itself new evidence. There may be other items, and I'm aware that because I've been approached by a couple of people in the audience about other materials related to that they consider to be new evidence. So I'm certain there will be some testimony to that effect, and we can talk about the possible options for council if there is new evidence.
Staff suggested conditions of approval are permissible to be discussed.
Conditions of approval, yes.
Thank you.
All right. Just for those of you that have never been in a city council meeting, we work really hard to provide a welcoming place for diverse points of view. As such, there's no hooting, there's no hollering, there's no clapping, no burping, no belching. If you feel the need to express yourself, you're welcome to do this or this. But beyond that, we like to maintain decorum. And finally, local law requires you to disclose if you are a lobbyist, whether that's for a business, for a nonprofit organization, a neighborhood association, and when you testify, you will only give your name. We do not want your address nor your phone number, just your name. With that, we'll begin with the staff report.
So thank you, Mayor Adams, council members, excuse me, Douglas Hardy with the Bureau of Development Services, Land Use Services. And I'm here today to present the hearings officer's decision on this land use review and the appeal of that decision. The applicant is requesting a Type 3 conditional use approval to allow a detention facility to operate at the site. The facility would be operated by the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement Bureau, also known as ICE, in a 5,198 square foot space within a expanded 114,000 square foot plus building on the site. The proposed 65,000 square foot building expansion received approval earlier this year through a design review that was reviewed by City Council, and the remainder of the building will be used as office space for ICE. The detention facility will consist of four holding cells as well as support space and process approximately 10 to 15 detainees daily. Detainees will be held for no more than 12 hours at the location, with no detainees held overnight. The applicant describes the activities occurring at the facility as, quote, relocating individuals from point to point, managing individuals in custody or in an alternative detention program, providing access to legal resources, and coordinating the removal of individuals from the U.S. who have been ordered deported. Because the proposal includes a mix of office space and other uses, a Type 3 Central City parking review is also required to allow the proposed 106 parking spaces on the site. As seen here, that the site is located in a central commercial or CX zone with a design overlay. The site is also located in the south end of the South Waterfront Subdistrict of the Central City Plan District. Surrounding properties, as seen here in the South Waterfront Subdistrict, are also located in the CXD zone. For this site, the CX zoning would allow, without any floor area bonuses, a building of approximately 265,000 square feet, or approximately 150,000 square feet more than what was approved through the earlier design review. The zoning would allow a building up to 125 feet in height at the site, or approximately six stories more than what is being proposed. Detention facilities are allowed in the CXD zone only if approved as a conditional use. This slide illustrates the full, I'm off one slide here. It's seen here that the site is located at the southeast corner of McAdam and Bancroft, with I-5 located just to the west of the site. Existing development in the immediate vicinity is largely mixed use, ranging today from manufacturing to auto repair to retail, with newer development consisting of residential towers with ground floor retail, as well as institutional development associated with OHSU. The 52,000 square foot site is currently developed, as seen here, with a 3 to 4 story office building, with the remainder of the site developed devoted to surface parking. The site is currently accessed from Southwest Bancroft. In addition to the abutting Southwest McAdam and Southwest Bancroft rights of way, there is an existing rail right of way that is located along the site's east boundary. Future plans call for extending Southwest Moody south along this right of way. This slide illustrates the full proposed build-out of the site, with the extension of Southwest Moody along the east edge of the property. The existing building is located in the upper right corner of the slide, with the proposed building extension located toward the left here, and it's being built over the existing surface parking lot. Both vehicular and pedestrian access to the site will continue to be from Southwest Bancroft, with vehicles required to pass through a gate and a staffed gatehouse. Detainees would arrive to the site in transport vans through the gated through the gate and be driven directly to an enclosed sally port located in the middle of the building. All loading and unloading of detainees would occur entirely within the building. And just quickly, these are just some of the proposed building elevations that were approved through the design review. The north elevation is what would be facing Southwest Bancroft. This is the west building elevation facing Southwest McAdam, and the east elevation facing the extended Southwest Moody. And also visible in this slide toward the middle of the photo, the slide is the sally port that would be used to bring the detainees to the site. For a quick tour of the existing site and vicinity, this is a view looking north toward the site from Southwest McAdam. As seen here, you see the surface parking lot with the four-story building to the back. A view of the building looking from Southwest Bancroft. And this is a view looking west at the west facade of the building. As seen here, development in the near vicinity is currently lower scale in development. The lot immediately to the east of the site here is basically a 1 to 2 story building. It does include a K through 8 school and about a third of that building. And some other uses, this is directly south of the property, with development north of the property being newer and built at a higher density. The lot in the foreground here under construction is being developed with a 5-story multi-dwelling building with 50 on-site parking spaces. And then a view looking further north along Moody Avenue with a taller 20-plus story, primarily residential buildings with ground floor retail. In terms of the conditional use approval criteria, these are found in 33.815.205 of the zoning code. The first approval criteria deals with the appearance of the proposed facility and ensuring that it is consistent with the character of the surrounding uses and development. And as indicated previously, the building itself was subject to design review. Both Design Commission and City Council did find that the proposal met the applicable design guidelines, and the applicant is proposing no modifications to that previously approved plan, and the hearings officer determined this criterion is met. The second approval criteria deals with safety and requires demonstrating that the proposal will not pose an unreasonable safety threat to nearby uses. To address this criterion, the applicant prepared a security plan that includes requirements for dealing with detainee transportation, facility security, as well as facility design. The hearings officer found that the safety criterion was met with one exception, dealing with the release of up to 3 detainees weekly at the site. The hearings officer found that there was insufficient evidence in the record to demonstrate that the release of these detainees would not pose a unreasonable safety risk to the surrounding area. And furthermore, there was nothing in the record from the police bureau responding to this particular issue. In response to this concern, the applicant has submitted into the record for your review an addendum to the security plan that Commissioner Fritz had referred to. That plan identifies in what circumstances detainees would be released and how they would be transported from the site. This plan indicates in all cases released detainees would be transported off-site by relatives or their representatives or by ICE staff. The Portland Police Bureau did review that addendum and included a memo into the record that finds that with these additional measures, nearby residents and uses would be protected from unreasonable safety threats. The next approval conditional use approval criteria deals with public services. Basically, it's dealing with adequacy of public services. The big one here is the impact on the transportation system and on-street parking. The hearings officer determined that the proposed 5,100 or 5,200 square foot detention facility will create substantially fewer vehicle trips than development allowed by right on the site, and found that the 106 parking spaces were adequate to accommodate the 134 ICE employees at the proposed facility. And based on that evidence, the hearings officer found that that approval criterion was met. The applicant has indicated is also applying for a central city parking review that's required for providing the 106 parking spaces. I won't go into detail in terms of those criterion. The hearings officer did find that the proposal does meet the applicable approval criterion to basically approve the 106 accessory parking spaces. And in fact, the Central City Parking Review was not a topic of the appeal. So based on that, the hearings officer did recommend or did deny the conditional use to allow the detention facility at the site and did approve the Central City Parking Review for the 106 parking spaces. As indicated previously, the hearings officer denied the conditional use request solely on the issue of insufficient evidence in the record regarding safety impacts associated with the release of detainees at the site. The hearings officer did find that all other approval criteria were met. The hearings officer's decision has been appealed by the property owner, Rodney Grinberg, with Lindquist Development Company. The basis for the appeal is that the hearings officer erred in determining that as a result of the release of some detainees at the site, that the conditional use safety approval criteria is not met. The appellant did, as indicated, submit an amended security plan to specify factors used to determine which detainees would be released from the site, and identifying how those released detainees would be transported from the site. I just wanted to note that in the staff recommendation, should ultimately council decide to approve the detention facility, there were a series of conditions of approval in staff's recommendation. One was to implement the security plan. And the security plan, again, dealt with the safety of the facility and how detainees would be transported to and from the site. The condition of approval also included that no razor wire or barbed wire be used around the perimeter fence, and that the applicant implement the transportation demand management plan that they had previously submitted. In terms of reviewing the applicant's detention custody release plan, the appellant's plan included several things that, number one, could not be enforced by the city of Portland. They are really programmatic things that deal with the types of they've covered programmatic issues that address things as the sorts of investigations that would take place at the facility and determining which particular detainees would be released from the facility. Staff finds that these factors are not something that, number one, the city is qualified to determine in terms of whether, for example, a detainee posed a flight risk or whether their criminal history would preclude them from being released. Additionally, our understanding is there is federal policy that applies to the release of detainees. So regardless of any condition, the facility would have to conform to that federal policy. Of that custody release plan that the applicant submitted, staff recommends that the items identified as 5.0 through 5.4 be included as a condition of approval in the circumstance that council ultimately approves the detention facility. The 5.0 through 5.4 basically deal with, again, how detainees would be released from the site in terms of how they would be transported from the site. And that was the particular issue that the hearings officer had raised in his decision. Staff would recommend that condition and that the ICE maintain a log of detainees that are released from the facility that identifies at least when they were released and the time that they were released and that they conform to those conditions of release. In terms of the previous staff recommendation about implementing the security plan, there are several building elements in that security plan that staff recommends that a condition be included that basically prior to final occupancy of the building, the applicant would submit a letter to the Bureau of Development Services confirming that the building elements of that security plan have in fact been implemented. So that's a very quick review of a very complicated site. So I'm certainly open for questions now or later.
I had one question following up on what your recommendation be enforceable.
Mm-hmm.
And so you pointed to 5.0 through 5.4.
Right.
And are we satisfied from counsel's point of view that there are no questions of federalism or other legal barriers to us enforcing the city of Portland enforcing these provisions as against this applicant?
Well, I guess my comment to that, first of all, would be the applicant has voluntarily agreed to that particular condition. They were the ones, in fact, who proposed those conditions that you see in 5.0 through 5.4. So they've agreed to implement that aspect of the security plan.
And have agreed to them and implicitly waived any rights they would have to challenge their enforceability?
The second part of your question, I would ask that you pose that to the applicant directly. But at least from the BDS perspective, that those 5.0 through 5.4 are elements that our compliance services feel that they can implement, or excuse me, they can enforce.
How does the conditions 5.0 through 5.4, it looks like they've been translated in this memo you just handed us out to a condition number 2. Am I kind of more suitable for enforceability by the Bureau of Development Services?
Yeah, for the most part, in that memo that I provided to you under 2A through C, those are taken for the most part from the applicant's proposed custody release plan. There may be a couple of words here and there that are modified, but my understanding is the applicant is receptive to those that particular condition as identified in staff memos number 2.
So these would actually supersede the 5.0 through 5.4.
Yes, right. And basically what I put in 2A through DR is just a suggested condition of approval if council decides to go that way.
Additional council?
Just, I guess, one other question. Mm-hmm. We can also pose this later when the parties are before us, but are the conditions that are now restated as 2A through D in the memo, are they different in any way from existing protocols that are in place at the 511 building?
Well, I can only speak from the city's perspective of how we ever reviewed or implement that particular facility or enforce that particular facility. That particular facility, because it is a federally owned building, never went through any sort of land use review. While it is the exact same facility we have here, there was no land use review required for that.
So I'll hold my questions till we get the applicant, because one question I have is, what's been the history at that site, and to what extent does that offer a prediction of what the history will be at this site? And so we'll pose those questions when we get the right parties.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. We'll now hear from the applicant. Welcome back.
Good afternoon. Mayor Adams, commissioners, I'm John Junkin. I'm a lawyer with Garvey Schubert Bear. I'm here today representing the applicant, Lindquist Development, Rodney Grinberg. And we are back. We were last before you last winter in regards to the design review application for this building. As you're well aware, this is an opportunity for the City of Portland to maintain within the city a very valuable asset that is the Homeland Security and ICE enforcement offices. They've been located at 511 Northwest Broadway for a number of years. They need to move out of that for a number of reasons. They have new tenants wanting to move into that, and we have letters from those new tenants. And they've been looking for a home in the central city, and they have found one at my client's property. Last time we were before you, it was for the design review. And just putting this in context, if you recall, an issue came up. What do you call that 5,198 square feet that's part of this overall building, large building? What is its primary use? And we had a discussion about that. And we called it a processing center, not a detention facility, a processing center. It consists of 4 temporary holding cells, three visitation rooms, an interview room, a secure control room, and some corridors. It was hard to kind of fit that into a definition within the city code, and your council chose that the best fit was to call it a detention facility. So as such, we went back to apply for a conditional use for that 5,198 square feet as a detention facility, which is allowed in this zone, but as conditional use. And although there may have been some frustration on our part, we did see this as an opportunity to allow the citizens more involvement and understand better what is going to happen at this site. The conditional use criteria are set out by code, and Mr. Hardy's done a good job of explaining how the hearings officer went through the criteria, and he found that we met all criteria, specifically as to the appearance issues, because we had the design review, and the public services issues. The one issue he had an issue with, if you will, the one criteria, deals with safety, because one of the criteria for a detention facility is that the facility and its operation will not pose an unreasonable safety threat to nearby uses and residents. And in reviewing the issues raised by the citizens and others as to concerns with safety, proximity to school, presence of guns, that sort of thing, the hearings officer found that there was that those things did not pose an unreasonable safety threat to the nearby uses and residents. He specifically found that they did not. And he relied in great part upon a memo that's in the file from the Portland Police Bureau that's in the record of June 20th that confirmed that they'd reviewed this facility and they did not pose an unreasonable safety threat. However, the hearings officer found that because of one operational aspect of this facility, and it's a minor aspect when you think about it in the context of having 134 employees and having about 15 detainees a day being processed through this facility. And when I say processed through, they're brought in secured transport through a Sally port. They spend no more than about 6 hours typically, and then they're transported out. But a few times a week, one of these, maybe up to three of these detainees may be released directly from the facility. And the hearings officer, the evidence presented to the hearings officer in regards to that came from the assistant field office director, Elizabeth Godfrey, and she's here today to provide further testimony. And she explained how these people were vetted, if you will, to assure that they did not pose any unreasonable threat. Notwithstanding that the only evidence in the record regarding this issue was from Ms. Godfrey, the hearings officer found that he could not make a finding that it did not pose an unreasonable threat because of a lack of evidence that he thought. One, that he because the security plan that we had offered did not specifically address the direct release of detainees, and further, that the Portland Police Bureau, although they had found there was no unreasonable threat here, did not specifically say in regards to the direct release of detainees, we find no specific threat or no unreasonable threat. That was the only basis upon which the hearings officer found that we did not meet the criteria for conditional use. It's a very narrow, limited issue addressing specifically an operational issue, if you will. In response to that, we have obviously filed an appeal. First, we believe the hearings officer was error because the only evidence in the record would support that the release of direct release of detainees does not constitute an unreasonable threat. But further, as part of our appeal, we have proposed further conditions as part of the security plan. ICE has proposed a release plan that's specific to Southwest McAdam, and I can respond to perhaps Commissioner Fish's question in a moment. But this is a release plan that's specific as to the 4310 building at Southwest McAdam. And that release plan specifically identifies how people are going to be released when they are released directly from the facility. And what the ICE has proposed, and we are proposing as a condition of approval, is that these people would be transported away upon direct release. When I say these people, I'm talking about the two or three per week that are directly released, would be transported away from the South Waterfront community, either to a mass transit facility or to some other mutually agreeable location, for example, the Justice Center downtown, where many people are released on a per-day basis. We propose that as a condition of approval. Again, we believe the hearings officer erred because there was no evidence to suggest this. Without this conditional approval, there would be an unreasonable threat. But in order to be good neighbors, and the applicant here really wants to be a good neighbor, and I want to point out, by the way, that there's an issue with the charter school right there, and the hearings officer found that did not create any public safety threat. The applicant in this case has been making available the parking lot at 4310 to the charter school during this whole time to allow them to park vehicles of the employees and the parents over there. So the applicant's interested and really desires to be a good neighbor. We believe now, though, that if you do the conditions of approval as amended with the supplement dealing with the direct release, we have satisfied any concern of the hearings officer in this regard. Further, there is another memo from the Portland Police Bureau. We do not consider this new evidence because what the Portland Police Bureau did is they clarified their earlier position, and specifically they address this condition of approval that we're now proposing regarding how ICE will deal with the direct release of detainees. So with that, we believe that we have certainly satisfied all the criteria for conditional use, and we'd ask that you reverse the hearings officer's decision and you grant the conditional use for this facility, this processing facility or detention facility at this location. I know there are questions.
So Commissioner Fish, then Commissioner Saltzman.
So Mr. Richter, you represent the, excuse me, I'm looking at the wrong sheet. You represent the property owner.
Yes.
Who represents ICE in this proceeding?
They have their own counsel who's not participating in this proceeding. And I wanted to clarify, respond to the question, Commissioner Fish, that you asked Mr. Hardy. It's the applicant, and that's my client, the owner of the property, who is agreeable to the conditions of approval as further proposed by staff this afternoon. It's the applicant. So obviously we don't have the federal question that you may have been concerned about, but we understand that as the applicant, we can agree to this condition, and now it's up to us to work with the federal government and GSA to assure that we will be in compliance.
At the risk of having the city pull your authority to operate the facility.
Yes.
Is there something in the record where ICE has agreed to these conditions, or are you representing for the record that they have?
Well, what we have presented as the supplemental conditions is in the form of what's called ICE Custody Release Plan, Seattle Field Office, and it is signed by the Field Office Director, Natalie Asher. So we believe with that it carries the force and effect of appropriate policy and plans for the ICE at this facility.
So one of the questions that I think we all have is, in light of the focus on safety, is what has been the experience at the other ICE facility, even though it was a federal facility and therefore not subject to the reach of our land use laws, we would still have some experience about how it operated and what its impact was on the community. So do you have, is there information in the record before us on that question?
Yes, there is. And I believe if you look at the memo of June 20th by the Portland Police Bureau, which is Exhibit E4, I believe, it in part addresses that issue. I can say this, that the ICE facility, as I understand, has been located at 511 Northwest Broadway for about three decades now. When we got involved, we attempted to determine what, if any, experiences they've ever had as far as detainees who may have been released, negative or otherwise, and there are none. We could find no evidence, no record that there any direct release of detainees at that location has ever created any sort of safety issue or concerns. Further, we have letters in the record from neighbors, the neighboring school, saying that they have never experienced any negative effects from the ICE facility at that location, which has been operating the same way that the ICE facility at this location has been operating, will operate, rather. We do have ICE people here today who can either come up now or perhaps during their own 3 minutes of testifying support who could respond specifically to some of these questions, Commissioner Fisher.
Let me just make sure I have both of those documents. The ICE custody release plan you're referring to is signed by Natalie Asher?
Yes.
And the Portland Police Bureau memo is the August 31st memo from Commander Jarmer?
Yes, and then there's a previous memo from Portland Police dated June 20th, which is in Exhibit E4, I believe.
So is it fair to summarize, then, Commissioner Saltzman, that no client will be released into the neighborhood?
It's fair to assume that there's the state make that statement. That's correct. As I read the release plan, in which the staff has now paraphrased into the conditions of approval, that under no circumstances would there be a direct release into the neighborhood, with the caveat that if someone comes to the facility, such as their attorney or a family member, and picks them up, they'd be released at that point. But if that does not happen, then they would be transported away from the South Waterfront community to another location.
Commissioner Saltzman?
Well, I'll ask you, Mr. Junkin, but maybe I have to hear from ICE itself. But in looking at the revised conditions, the idea, I guess, given the hearings officer's concern was maybe a minor one, but did find maybe some unreasonable risk to directly releasing people in the neighborhood. The condition being proposed that a person could be released if they're going to be picked up by a relative or friend or attorney or NGO seems a little problematical to me, and I guess I want to ask you to consider, or your client, would you consider a condition that would require, and I've got it written up, that ICE would have to transport a detainee to the transit free zone, which is a border, which I can provide you a map. And I think that may mitigate some concerns people would have about people waiting for people to be released in the neighborhood. So rather than having that option, simply say that these 2 to 3 individuals a week that would be released would be transported by ICE to the transit-free zone, which is basically downtown to the north.
Commissioner Saltzman, I think that might be better addressed to ICE. My understanding, though, would be that if someone was coming to pick somebody up at the building, the detainee would wait in the building until that person arrived. So if their relative showed up, they would not leave the building until the relative showed up and come to the building, and then at that point would be released to them.
And my concern is kind of that the relatives or family could just be hanging out in the neighborhood until they get that phone call.
Yes.
And that, I think that reflects some of the concerns that people who are in school or have students.
We didn't understand that the concern was that some relative or attorney for a detainee would constitute an unreasonable safety threat. I mean.
Well, I'm asking whether your client would consider this modified condition of approval. So you don't have to answer that now. You can take it under consideration.
Okay.
So is somebody from ICE going to testify?
Yes. And they will have their own time, or if they can come up now. Are there any other questions? But the applicant, again, we appreciate that these are conditions on the applicant. They're important to the applicant to make sure these conditions, if this is approved, with these conditions are lived up to in order to maintain the building. Thank you.
We'll now hear from supporters of the appeal.
We have a few on the list here. James Grunwald, Pat Prendergast, Elizabeth Godfrey, and Dan Brown. Would you come up?
Okay. Do we have a fourth? What? No? No fourth? So who's next on the list?
David August.
All right. Who would like to go first? I can choose someone. I choose you. I choose
first.
The smartest one gets to go first. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, Commissioners Fritz, Saltzman, Fish, and Leonard. My name is Elizabeth Godfrey. I'm an assistant field office director with ICE with oversight responsibility for the criminal alien program in Oregon and Southwest Washington. I'm here this afternoon to address the safety concerns surrounding the release of certain ICE detainees from the proposed ICE facility on McAdam Avenue, the issue before the Portland City Council today. From time to time, ICE releases certain eligible persons from custody pending decisions on their removal cases. Release eligibility is based on a combination of factors, including danger to the public, flight risk, length of time the person's lived in the United States, what their ties to the community are, immigration status of any immediate relatives, eligibility for relief from a removal order, health, and other humanitarian considerations. As part of the process, telephone calls are permitted for detainees to arrange for transportation away from the facility upon release. However, we are also prepared to transport to a mass transit location or other mutually agreeable location within the city of Portland those detainees who do not have someone to pick them up directly from the McAdam facility. As circumstances indicate, we may also provide funds sufficient for transportation fare when and if necessary. Now, it may be helpful to put the few direct releases of ICE detainees in context with other law enforcement operations in Portland. The Multnomah County Sheriff's Office staffs and operates the Multnomah County jails, including the Multnomah County Detention Center, MCDC, in downtown Portland, a couple blocks from here. All Multnomah County custody releases occur at MCDC and average about 90-plus per day, according to the monthly jail report for July 2011, far in excess of any direct releases of ICE detainees. Most ICE detainees considered for release will be non-criminals. However, the few that are criminal aliens will not be subject to active and/or extraditable warrants and will have served their time and have the right to be in public and walk the streets of Portland. The ICE custody release and security plans were reviewed by the Portland Police Bureau. The Bureau concluded and has stated on the record that the proposed ICE facility and operations will not pose an unreasonable safety threat to nearby uses and residents. I hope that this information satisfies any concerns over the direct release of ICE detainees. It is our aim to continue to be a good neighbor and an asset to the community by enforcing the law and ensuring that the individuals in our custody are afforded basic human decency and the due process that they are entitled to under the law. Thank you.
Sir.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. I am here representing the U.S. General Services Administration. My name is Dan Brown. And we lease space for federal agencies across the nation, and specifically in this case, we have a lease with Lindquist Development and support ICE in this project. We also have a very positive relationship with the City of Portland in locating multiple projects in the city, including the Hatfield Courthouse, the Pioneer Courthouse, and most recently, the Edith Green Wendell Wyatt High Performance Green Building. In addition to that, we have leases in 33 buildings in the area, all located in the central business area. Most recently, the sister service to Immigration and Customs Enforcement was requested by part of this city council to be relocated into the central business area, which GSA was happy to do. It's part of our executive order mandate, an executive order signed by Jimmy Carter in the 70s that says we have to relocate agencies in the central business area. ICE is also satisfying that requirement, and we feel that they have met the safety conditions that were presented by the hearings officer. They've updated their release plan, and it's been reviewed and concurred on by the Portland Police Bureau as a safe for the residents in the area. I think the evidence from the 511 building from 35 years, and as there's also a letter from the Pacific Northwest College of Art that attests to their neighborhood involvement in the Pearl District that they haven't had any issues. So we urge the City Council to grant the conditional use permit and feel that it is valid. Should the city not grant the conditional use permit, it does have a ripple effect on the larger community because we have the intention of doing a public benefit conveyance of the existing 511 building to the Pacific Northwest College of Art for restoration of an historic structure, and also the public benefit conveyance to the city of Portland for the continuation of the park blocks in the Pearl District. So there's a great benefit for the greater community of Portland. We urge that the facility is safe. The citizens will be protected. We're confident in ICE's ability to do that, and we support the project and ask that you approve the conditional use permit. Thank you.
A question for the city attorney, Mr. Hardy. Were those two letters that were referenced, were they part of the record for the hearings officer?
It's my understanding they came in since the hearings officer's decision, and we're actually at this point just trying, in order to not interrupt people's testimony, okay. We're talking about things that we think may or may not be in the record, and I'm quite certain that the opponents of the application had some concerns about those letters and will express them during their testimony.
Thank you for the clarification. Just one more piece for my information. Is the record from the previous case that came to council, is that part of the record for this case?
Meaning the design review. Is the design review record part of this? No, it is not.
Thank you.
If you could interrupt, I'd appreciate it.
So I'll interrupt if you'd like.
I'm not sure which pieces of which speaker is okay. Of concern to you all. If you don't interrupt, I fear the process will go longer.
Okay. It is my understanding from Mr. Hardy that two pieces of information cited by Ms. Godfrey are information that he does not believe were before the hearings officer. Both of them relate to Multnomah County information. One was July data regarding Multnomah County custody releases. The other is information regarding Multnomah County detention procedures. Is that correct? Okay. Those are the two pieces.
Those are not part of the record, but the memos from the police bureau are part of the record.
The June memo from the police bureau was part of the record. The August memo from the police bureau was not in front of the hearings officer. It came in August, which was after the hearings officer's decision. The applicant has asserted that that does not contain new evidence. I assume that others may disagree with that characterization.
That's contested. Okay. Sir?
Pat Prendergast, 3720 Southwest Bond Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97239. I'm a resident of South Waterfront, and I've also been a resident of the Pearl District and was intimately involved in its development, as I testified before. Just a brief comment to put it in perspective from where a layperson sits, and not to be redundant with prior testimony. This facility has been where it is for 35 years without incident. There's no record of any incidences there. It is not nearly as secure as this new facility will be. And it coexists with multifamily rental housing, as I testified before, in a mixed-use neighborhood. There's an additional facility across the street that's just been completed by, I believe, the PDC or the Housing Authority. There have been Montessori schools on the park blocks adjacent to the facility. Immigration's used to co-tenant with ICE. They're moving further into the Pearl. To be able to move from the Pearl District in Northwest Portland to a new facility in Southwest Portland, both part of the central city, both operations similar, less the immigration piece, it is puzzling why there is so much misinformation out there. In prior testimony, the chairman of the Land Use Subcommittee for the Neighborhood Association has made comments about it being like Guantanamo. He's also made reference to the fact that they would have never allowed a facility like this in the Pearl District, which made me realize he didn't know where the current facility really was. It's a shame that information like that, and I mentioned this before, was out on the street and not brought to everybody's attention prior to these appeals. It is a very minor move from one end of town to the other end of town with a more secure facility doing the same thing without any safety problems or issues or oversight by the city. It's because it's going from federal ownership to private ownership. It'll add tax base. It'll add all the things that private development does and create jobs. And it's frustrating as a citizen and as a resident of South Waterfront to try to understand why there's a problem with respect to safety concerns when there have never been any safety issues. And we've spent a lot of time on it and a lot of money with legal counsel. So I hope you will support the appeal from the applicant.
Sir?
I'm primarily up here as the...
Could you give us your full name?
I'm James Cronwald. I'm sorry. I'm James Cronwald. I'm currently employed as the from Immigration Customs Enforcement. I'm the contractor's office representative at the detention facility in Tacoma, which we operate, a 1,575-bed detention facility. I'm the local ICE ERO, Immigration and Enforcement Operations, representative on this project, and the project manager here. And I'm basically up here to answer any questions that you might have with Ms. Godfrey in terms of this application.
I have a question.
Sure.
Go through Ms. Godfrey, but I believe you were, last time we visited this, I remember, I think we had the conversation that the four holding cells or holding rooms, whatever.
They're holding cells.
Holding cells. Mm-hmm. Have a capacity of some 30 to 40 people each?
No. The total capacity of the holding cells is 75 people. So
the total of the four?
All four of them, if they were completely full. But I think that within the context of that discussion, you also need to take in consideration that, generally we only have 10 to 15 people that are processed through those temporary cells a day, okay? And within that context, you know, we have, those cells are of various sizes. So we have, you know, we have customers that include, females, males, juveniles, could be a juvenile, people with disabilities. So, for instance, two of those cells are laid out to accommodate individuals with disabilities. So, for instance, there could be an instance where you have four bodies and all four cells are occupied. So, just the fact that it has the capacity of 75 doesn't mean that there'll be 75 in there. It's just that, you know, we can't, for example, we couldn't contain or we couldn't detain a juvenile with a non-relative male or a non-relative female in the same cell.
And do all
there are
people,
a number of examples that along that line.
And do all people who are processed through this facility arrive from transportation from ICE through the Sally Port?
Anybody that's coming there on that our primary feeder for this facility or this processing facility is our criminal alien program. Okay, so those individuals are coming to us from local jails, state institutions, or federal institutions within the state of Oregon and four counties in Southwest Washington. Yes, and they'll come via transport. Could be a bus. Could be a airporter or could be a van. Those are all designed for the transportation of detainees. Those detainees are secured within the vehicle. The vehicle goes into the Sally Port. The Sally Port door closes. Those individuals exit the Sally Port into a search area. And you have to remember that within the context of that, what you're classifying as a detention facility, which we don't classify that. We basically classify it as a processing area. Right. Tacoma is a detention facility. Basically, those individuals, every exit and entry into that particular area has a design we call man trap, okay? So you have basically a box with a door on each end.
And, yeah, no, I think we've covered this last time, and it's in the record. But I wanted to maybe now ask Ms. Godfrey. I sort of earlier proposed a condition that anybody released would be transported to a mutually agreeable site in the Portland. I'm kind of modifying it from what I said a few minutes ago, but which is one of the conditions you've submitted. Is that something, if we were to make that the condition, that people released are transported by ICE to a mutually agreeable location.
I would not be in a position to agree to that.